जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवरदारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवरदारी यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना कीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, which is entitled Dhyana Yoga, text 32. Atmopamyena sarvatra samam pasyati yojuna Sukam va yada va dukam sa yogi paramo mataha atmopamyena sarvatra samam pasyati arjuna sukam va yadi va dukam Sa yogi parama mataha Atma upamyena sarvatra Samamam pasyati yojuna Sukam vayadi vadukam Sa yogi paramo mataha Atmapunya Sarvatra. Atma, self, Aupamyena, by comparison, Sarvatra, everywhere, Samam, equality, Pashyati, sees, Yaha, he who, Arjuna, O Arjuna, Sukam, happiness. Va, or, yadi, if, va, or, dukam, distress, saha, such, yogi, transcendentalist, paramaha, perfect, mataha, considered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings, both in their happiness and distress, O Arjuna. Purport. One who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. The cause of the distress of the living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God, and the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all activities of the human being. Krishna is the proprietor of all lands and planets. The perfect yogi is the sincerest friend of all living entities. He knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold material miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. Because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world, and he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. Natasmat kaschit me priya krita tamaha. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities, and in this way he is factually the friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man toward Krishna consciousness. Umakyanti marandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakampitam Cha. He Krishna Karana Sindo Dino Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Guru Parampara. May Shishi Radhe Sham Sundar be pleased by this effort to hear Srimad Bhagavad Gita together. May all the devotees be benefited in hearing Bhagavad Gita. So again, this is chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, text 32. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings, both in their happiness and distress, O Arjuna. So this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is not ordinary knowledge. Spiritual knowledge, when it's received properly, it has the power to change our state of consciousness. Ordinary knowledge can only modify our present state of consciousness. We're born with a certain consciousness, a conditioning. And ordinary knowledge can modify that, change that to some extent, but to actually change your state of consciousness, to come to a higher level of consciousness, we require transcendental knowledge. That's the power that it has. Otherwise, we're just shifting our one state of consciousness that we have now, making little movements, little changes. But is another state of consciousness possible? Srimad Bhagavatam explains there are different states of consciousness. Just there's this state of deep sleep. There's this state of dreaming. These are different states of consciousness. And then there's awake, being awake, like all of us hopefully right now are awake. That's another state of consciousness. But beyond that, there's another state of consciousness where one awakens spiritually. This is Turiya. Turiya means the fourth state. We only know of sleeping and being awake, two states of consciousness. But there are other possibilities. And transcendental knowledge, because it's from this other state, the vibration, the same vibration, spiritual vibration, when we're receptive to it, it can lift us up to a higher level of consciousness. Therefore, when the Bhagavad Gita ends, what does Arjuna say? Nashto moho smriti labda. From hearing Krishna nicely, properly, in the right state of consciousness, open, receptive, with faith, then Arjuna says, all my doubts are now gone. My illusion is gone. Smriti labda. I've regained my memory. There's different kinds of memory. There's horizontal memory. Like you remember something on this horizontal plane of existence. You remember something from the past, earlier in your life. But there's also vertical memory. There's a memory that can also, we can regain our consciousness of a higher level of consciousness. It's not just the horizontal plane of material life, but it's vertical. It's something above. We may get a flash of it sometimes. You know, you're ever sitting in a temple, you're chanting the holy name in kirtan, and you may get a flash of an experience. It's like a memory. Oh, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. It's true. It's not theoretical. Some experience, some joy comes into the heart. Some trust comes into the heart, where you know that whatever happens in life, there's a feeling of trust that Krishna is there, Krishna is taking care. So that can come into our hearts when we hear properly. So Arjuna, therefore, he's the perfect student. We should follow Arjuna, Prabhupada explains in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. If we want the experiences of Arjuna, we also have to follow the attitude, the mood of Arjuna when we hear the Bhagavad Gita. I was just mentioning, asking the blessings for all of us, that me and my wife just had our first child, newborn baby boy, so we named him Arjuna. And Arjuna was the perfect student. You know, even his military teacher, Dronacharya. Dronacharya taught everybody equally, but it's also said that he was particularly drawn to Arjuna. Because Arjuna, being such a skilled student, but also very humble, very much wanting to learn, great respect for his teacher, great humility. And then of course in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is chosen by Krishna to be the receiver of this transcendental knowledge. He becomes surrendered to Krishna. He admits, he's very honest, Arjuna. He admits his weakness and unable to solve his problem, his confusion. He admits this and he falls at Krishna's feet. I don't know what to do. I've become weak-hearted. You please instruct me. I'm your servant. I'm your disciple. So then, therefore, because of this mood, then he's completely changed at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. Nashto moha smriti labda tvat prasada. Because of your mercy, Krishna, all my delusion is gone. I've regained my memory. And also it says that all the doubts are removed. And also now my will is aligned with your will. I will follow your instructions. This is the whole goal of spiritual life. We have our own will, my self-will, that I want to do what I want to do. This causes so much pain and suffering in our hearts. We have a plan. We have a plan. We have our own idea, our own conviction of this is how I'll be happy. But once our will becomes aligned with the will of the super soul, the supreme will of God, then we're actually happy. And this is what happens to Arjuna at the end of the Gita. I've forgotten Krishna. I was in delusion. Now it's gone by the grace of your teachings, and now I am aligned again with your will. So how do we experience this change in a state of consciousness, just like Arjuna? Because the Bhagavad Gita, it has transformative power, but it depends on our mood in hearing it. You know, it's like some people, they can eat very nutritious food, but you may have some disease, or you may have, they have these intestinal worms. I had one friend who was trying to get nourishment from food, trying to eat very healthy, but these worms were actually taking all the nutrients from the food. And therefore he was becoming very weak, very tired. It was several months where he was just suffering. So transcendental knowledge is also like food for the soul. But we could be in a particular state where we're robbed of the nutrients that are actually contained in that knowledge. We have to be in the right state. A certain attitude is necessary. And we have to look to Arjuna for that attitude. What was his attitude? Anusuyavi. He had, Krishna says, I'm speaking this to you, Arjuna, because you have no envy in your heart. You have no envy. You know, we often think that we already know, we envy God without knowing. Sometimes we won't say that we have envy towards God. But when we feel that I know myself, I already know, this pride is there. Envy of God is there in the heart of all living beings who are separated from Krishna. Just like when something goes wrong in your life, what do we feel? We feel resentment. This is a form of envy towards God. Why does it have to go this way? It should go the way I want. My desire should be fulfilled. So when we're angry, when we're resentful, when things happen to us in life, we're saying to Krishna that I don't trust you, I don't believe in the I don't believe in the way you've created things. I don't believe that this is actually for my good. But I'm angry, I'm resentful. Because there's envy in the heart. And it comes out as this resentment when life goes according to, away from our desires, our wishes. So Arjuna had no envy towards Krishna. Sakha, he was a friend, he was a friend of Krishna's. That was the qualification. So we have to be friendly, to receive, to be changed by the Bhagavad Gita, we have to have a friendly attitude towards Krishna. This doesn't mean like a friend like a cowherd boy. It's a more general kind of friendly nature towards Krishna. It means believing that whatever comes again into my life, it is Krishna doing for my good. The universe, the creation is friendly. It is Krishna's creation. Even while I'm mixed in this material world of karma, action, reaction, but still, there's Krishna's grace behind everything. So whatever comes to me, Krishna's my friend. I accept it. I may not be able to understand it. It may be painful even, but I trust that it is a friendly universe. Because it is Krishna's, that's Krishna's made of that kindness. He's made of love. So when we trust that, we can hear the Bhagavad Gita in that mood of being having a friendly feeling towards Krishna. Then we can receive the teachings, just like Arjuna. And then when we hear, the hearing will also be like a kind of darshan. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explains, when you hear properly, it is also darshan. It is also a direct viewing, a direct experience, a direct seeing of Krishna. When you chant in the right state of mind, that is also darshan of Krishna. So darshan usually means seeing, but you can see in many different ways. Hearing is also seeing when it's done in the right state. It awakens us to something. It removes our doubts. So all this comes when we hear it properly. So before we read Bhagavad Gita, before we chant, we should always first check in with our consciousness. We just don't start off straight away. Wake up in the morning, suddenly you're up and all the desires are rushing into your mind and all the confusion and all the things, all the identifications, and you're feeling negative, whatever it may be, and now I'll read Bhagavad Gita, our chant, I'll chant. But look what we're bringing. That consciousness is not receptive to be changed by the power of the Bhagavad Gita. So first check in with yourself for a moment. How am I hearing? In a prayerful mood, in a grateful mood, with attention. If all of those things are there, then the transcendental knowledge can actually descend into our heart and change us. So in this sixth chapter, Krishna's message to Arjuna is to become a yogi. And he's describing here Parama Yogi, the greatest yogi. What is the characteristics? What are the characteristics of the greatest yogi, Parama Yogi? It says here, Atmopamyena. This verse, what is this verse saying? I'll read it again. Try to hear and understand what this verse is actually saying about the greatest yogis. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings, both in their happiness and distress, O Arjuna. So, atmaupamyena. By comparison to his own self, he's seeing the equality of all beings, and therefore he feels the pain that others feel, and he feels the happiness that others also feel. It's like there's a oneness between all living beings. You know, it's a realization. And when a person is suffering, usually we pretend that we feel their suffering, but most of us don't. You know, when something goes wrong in the world and you turn on the news or the politicians, well, these people are suffering there, our heart goes out to them, we think of them, we're praying for them. But does it really? Do you really feel it? Or do you forget it a moment later? You know, we speak that way. And then a moment later, we change the channel. We eat something, we go to sleep. The next day, we're back absorbed in our own lives. It's not actually happening. It's a very advanced state to actually feel, because it means you've connected deeply. There's a communion between you and others. You see that The harm they go through is felt as one's own. That is the perfect yogi who feels that. And also, one thing about this, we might question, well, this verse is saying that you feel the suffering of others and their suffering, and you feel their happiness. So does that mean when a person is just doing some kind of sense gratification and they're very happy, does the pure devotee feel that happiness with them? You know, if somebody's eating something abominable, but their tongue says, this is very good, you know, something, drinking some liquor, the person thinks, I'm very happy. So does the devotee feel that happiness? No, that's not what's meant. He feels, actually, whether they're happy or in distress on the material level, he experiences both as distress. When a person is getting happiness from something superficial, the devotee doesn't feel happy. He feels distress because he understands that happiness is superficial. The real happiness is the connection to Krishna. So therefore, that's why Prabhupada in the purport is explaining the real distress is forgetfulness of Krishna. And the real happiness is when one turns back to Krishna. When a devotee sees another person doing that, he feels great happiness. They're returning to Krishna. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, when he would see people in this material world being happy, he would be very sad. Because that happiness, we know the true result of it. You know, like when Prabhupada saw people playing golf. He thought this was very interesting. Maybe they don't golf so much in India, I don't know. But when Prabhupada saw golfing, he saw these old men at a very old age, retired. And Prabhupada said, they're hitting a ball into a hole with a stick. How sad. That's how they're ending their life. People who golf are very happy, right? It's like they look forward to retiring. You play this sport, you're outside in the sun, a little competition. It's like a very nice thing for most people. Now, Prabhupada brought a tear to his eye. So their happiness was not experienced by the devotee. They saw both happiness and distress as distress. Or Prabhupada also saw people surfing. Again, some people, it's like, I have a friend who loves surfing. He explains to me the joy of it, how it's so exhilarating. You're riding the waves and you're out there in the ocean. It's just so powerful, it's so beautiful. So people love that. They're happy. They're excited. And Prabhupada said, they are not surfers, they are sufferers. They're suffering. So this is the vision of one who's actually advanced, because they know something else exists. If we don't know anything else exists, then we'll think that is happiness. But if you have an experience of a higher state of consciousness, Krishna consciousness, then you can see the truth of the lower state, how both happiness and distress is distress. This was explained by the Buddha as well. Buddha therefore said, all experience in the material world is dukkha. Why? Because it is temporary by nature. And if you go too into the superficial happiness and the superficial distress, if your mind is absorbed in those dualities again and again, you take another birth. And so a yogi can see this vision, this extended vision, that if they continue so-called enjoying in this way, it leads to another birth. Therefore, it is a sad thing to see. So this verse is describing that by comparison to their own self, because they have a true understanding of the self, they understand there's a conditioned self and there's a pure self. And it's a question of identification with which self are you identifying with. Because they've realized that within themselves, they also understand it's the truth of every other living being, and therefore they feel compassion. You know. And if they see a person who's starting to wake up, devotees are wandering in this material world giving an opportunity for another state of consciousness. If they see someone take to that process that's given, then the devotee, they start to feel great happiness. Even if someone's struggling in spiritual life, the devotee will feel great happiness. They are on the path. It will take some time, but now they are turning back to Krishna. So in the background, of the mind of a pure devotee, there's always a state of compassion as they look upon the souls of this world. It's, you know, this compassion is very advanced. We sometimes call it compassion. Like, you know, some people, I work as a chaplain and I'm with people at the end of life, and some people say, oh, you're so compassionate that you're with people, helping them at that time. And I know I have no compassion, actually. Usually there's no feeling of compassion. I just treat it as trying to do my duty, trying to do my best to serve. I'm not feeling, you know, not seeing that this is a soul. I tell myself that and try to get there, but I also know it's not this, I'm not flowing with love, the compassion of someone like Srila Prabhupada, who really sees with the eyes of the compassion, sees the truth. So, usually we have pity for others, which is very different than compassion. What's the difference between pity and this higher level of compassion? Anyone? What is there in pity? What's the difference between these two? Try to distinguish so we can see that there's something, compassion is to be achieved and not that we already have it. Anyone? Yes, Prabhu.
Maybe pity has an element of selfishness. We're happy that's not us going through that experience.
Yeah, we hear that often, right? That people, we say something like, or we think, maybe we don't say it, but I'm glad that's not me. I feel bad for this person. You know, it's almost just that. I feel bad for this person, they're suffering. Thank God it's not me. You know, that's not this higher level of compassion. That's just seeing that there's suffering and, oh, thank God I've escaped it. This person's suffering, I feel bad. Anyone else, the difference between pity and compassion? What else is there in pity?
I'm better than them. I'm not suffering the way they are.
Yeah, sometimes we feel superior. And we feel it can be condescending. I pity this person. Oh, I pity you've had such a bad life. Again, and I feel myself as maybe superior in some way. That element is also there. But true empathy, right? Empathy, pathi, means also like suffering. Compassion also. Passion means to suffer. Compassion means to suffer with another person. You suffer with them. And for a pure devotee, it's not in exactly the same way as that person, because they're suffering under a kind of illusion. It's not identical. Just like you have a little baby, and they may suffer because you take away a toy. But the parent is not so foolish. They're not going to suffer in the same way that the baby is crying and screaming, they lost their toy, now they have nothing, now there's just suffering. A parent doesn't feel that. A parent, being more mature, understands that they're suffering from the loss of this toy. I'm suffering seeing them suffering, but it's not the same. It's not the same kind of suffering. So a pure devotee, in the same way they see us suffering from superficial things, they don't feel it like we feel it. We think our life is over, something's taken away, I lose my phone, something's gone, I'm just destroyed. So the pure devotee doesn't think, oh, I'm also destroyed because you've lost your phone. But they see just existential suffering, that we're caught in this place of so-called happiness, so-called distress, and it brings pain into their heart. And therefore they dedicate themselves to do something about it, to give us something. That's another difference between compassion and pity. Pity, you know, you suffer, others suffer, you just feel this pity, usually you don't do much with it. You don't take to any kind of action. You don't know what to do. You don't know how to help. People devise many ways of trying to help when they feel some pity. But you have to have whole knowledge to be able to help. You have to see that we're souls that have fallen from the spiritual dimension. We've come into this material world, we're identifying with the conditioned self, but in the heart there's a spark of divinity. If you see all that, if you see the whole picture, then you can have compassion in the right way. If you don't have all that knowledge, if you have just partial information that here we are, I'm here, you're here, we die, it all ends at death, then the methods you try to create to be compassionate will always be partial. They don't have complete knowledge. You need to really understand another person. You have to see the whole truth of life. You have to see everything. You have to see sambandha gyan. You have to see there's God. There's the living entity who's part and parcel. There's the material energy. We're caught in the movements of the material energy, but there's an opportunity to come out. Then one knows what compassion is, what it looks like. Therefore, you give a method, you give knowledge, you give ways in which a person can transcend and come back to their original nature. So when we hear Bhagavad Gita, first we have to learn it with our minds, and then we have to try to apply what's given. And then this leads to realization of it. And when we actually have realization of this, then we'll start to have realization of the true self, and therefore the realization of the truth self of others. And then you can do something to help. You know? What does self-knowledge mean according to the Vedic paradigm? When we talk about self-knowledge in the world, we just mean our psychology. Oh, I have certain strengths, I have certain weaknesses. That's important also. But self-knowledge, true self-knowledge, means to understand I have a certain material psychology, a certain conditioning, strengths and weaknesses, and then I have another self. I have the Atma. So these two things, there's an opportunity to shift from one to the other. How to do that? This is real self-knowledge. We have to observe the conditioned self first. If we're identified with it, how will you get out of it? It's like trying to pull yourself out of a river by pulling at your own hair. Or when you're standing on a plank, you try to lift the plank. You can't do it. In your normal state of consciousness, you can't get out of the normal state. If you're identified with it, you can't get yourself out of it. But if you start to believe and start to trust and start to experience that, no, there's something in me that can observe the conditioned self. We should ask ourselves every day, what is my mind up to today? What is my mind doing right now? Maybe my mind, I'm sitting here in Bhagavad Gita class, where's my mind? And then we just realize, oh, my mind has gone to this place. But now let me bring it back. Who's directing? Who said, let me bring it back? Who says that? Is it the same conditioned mind, or is it something else that can now start to take control? That's important to see the depth of this idea, that there's something in us that can witness, that can observe the conditioned mind, and that's the beginning of separating from the conditioned mind. Something in us has to separate from the conditioned self. Because if we're only just identified with the conditioned self, then we'll be like that forever. So therefore we hear this idea of watching the mind, observing the mind, seeing what the mind is up to. Notice when your mind takes you into a very negative place. You have a choice. If you're awake, you have a choice. I'll get myself out of this place. Let me now put my mind somewhere else. It's like if you go into nobody drives their car and goes into a very negative or very, let's say, a dangerous neighborhood, and you get out of your car and you start walking around. That would be foolish, right? But psychologically, there are places we can go psychologically that are very dangerous and harmful. And we allow ourselves to go there and indulge in it. And we could get robbed. We can also get attacked, just like you can on the physical level. You go to a dangerous neighborhood, you may get attacked. So we should feel the same internally. Where am I going now in my mind? I'm allowing my mind to indulge in something very negative. I'm going down this road. I'm opening myself up to be attacked, to be harmed in some way. But if I can see that happening and say, no, let me get out of that psychological neighborhood. Let me get out of that psychological country and go to this other place where there's Krishna. Let me now fix my mind on something transcendental. That's the task that we have. That's the task. And if we do that again and again, Krishna will start to help us. It happened by Krishna's grace. Krishna's grace is there. He's waiting to see some little effort, some sincerity. So the more you start to observe your mind, the more I start to observe my mind, the more I realize that I'm in a state of having no power to change myself. I can only see what's happening. That's the extent of it. But I can't change myself. So I'm totally dependent on grace. I'm totally dependent on mercy. So then a mood comes over me. Krishna, please. You bless me with your mercy. I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, but my mind is taking me away. I'm trying to bring it back and be attentive. But let me just be open. I'm just open to your mercy. When you want to give me your mercy, only then can a change come. That mood, that's the mood of Arjuna. That's the mood of the sincere seeker, devotee. Realizing that we're powerless to truly change ourselves, we're powerless. And if I can realize that about me, again, this verse, Atmaupam yena, by comparison to my own self, I'll start to understand others. I'll understand others are also going through that. They're also entrapped. They also can't change themselves. They're trying, I'm trying, they're trying. This will give you the power to tolerate others. This will give you the power to forgive others when you can see from your own experience that just as you are entrapped, they are entrapped. If you can see that, then you'll have the power to tolerate another's negative, let's say their negative manifestations. You'll have the power to forgive them when they do wrong, because you'll also see that, look at all of us, our souls falling into this world. We're all doing wrong, we're all harming each other, we're all exploiting each other. This is how you get the power to forgive, how you get the power to tolerate. If you don't know any of this and you just try to forgive and tolerate, it's never the real thing. You're just trying to make some moral attempt to be kind. You know, oh, I should be good to people. Let me try to be good. I should forgive. Let me try to forgive. That has no power in it. There has to be an understanding from your own, seeing your own self. Now you can see the others. Because when you understand yourself truly, fully, then you'll see every other being is in the same existential situation. Therefore, I'll feel compassion for them because I understand. I'm also lost in this material world needing mercy. That gives you the power to forgive another person. Otherwise, you can't forgive. Again, we use all these words, forgiveness, compassion, they're all like imitations of the real thing until you have transcendental knowledge and you're on a spiritual path. So, atmayopenyena. One must see from one's own experience, have an understanding of the happiness and distress in others and be able to empathize with that. And to serve, therefore to serve. Seva vritti. In the consciousness, there are vrittis. Vrittis are like oscillations in the mind. It's the mode of passion. There's always movements in the mind, but once they start to settle down and one has a relationship with Krishna and a devotee of Krishna, then a new vritti comes up, or you can say one very special vritti awakens. It's called the seva vritti. There's another vritti, another oscillation, which is the desire to serve. That awakens, that is in us already, but it's covered. It's because of all the other vrittis, all the other movements, we can't experience it. But as they settle down, right, as the mind begins to settle, becomes more stable, hopefully by a lifestyle of sattva-guna. Sattva-guna begins to stable the mind. Bhagavad Gita is often speaking about this. Doing your duty in life. Detached action. Why is that recommended? Because by detached action, doing your duty, the mind starts to become a little settled. You're not too passionate about the results. You just do your duty. It's the mode of goodness. Your mind will settle. And with a settled mind, now something from above can come down in. The higher spiritual energy can come. And what can then awaken in you? The desire to serve. The seva vritti. So these verses here in the sixth chapter are pointing Arjuna to what it means to be a perfect yogi. And even though this chapter is about meditation, it has the touch of bhakti everywhere. And this verse also included the compassion to others. This is a touch of bhakti. And this chapter culminates with Krishna saying, the best of all yogis. We'll just read this verse and conclude and open it for any thoughts, comments, or questions. The last verse of this chapter. Yoginam api sarvesham matkatenantaratmana shradavan bhajate yo mam same yuktatamo mata mataha. And of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. So just to sum up, we have self-knowledge that we need from Bhagavad Gita, second chapter especially, talking about the nature of the true self, the conditioned self. We want to separate from that by observation, by observing ourselves. And then we'll start to see the true reality of what my existential position is. That will cause compassion to others, because we'll see others are in the same place. So I'm practicing something, but I'm also dependent on mercy, on Krishna. And I give my heart with devotion to Krishna. And by Krishna's grace, then he blesses us with the true vision of compassion, the true experience of bhakti. And that is the greatest of all yogis, the one who lives and acts in that way. So we'll stop here. Anyone have any reflections, thoughts, comments, questions? Hare Krishna. Yeah. Yeah, and therefore we understand, you know, that the only way to really come out of this conditioned nature, because we devise our own plans, but it's always again from the same identity. You know, we come up with, you know, there's so many books that you can get at the library that are trying to help you. And they can do some helping, some modifying on the material level, but they can't give you another state of consciousness. Someone who's in that higher state of consciousness can give it to you. Right? Therefore, it's necessity to come across a person who is in that state of consciousness. And for those who are serving that person, they can also help because they also direct you. You know, we may not be so advanced ourselves, but we know where to go. So we can also direct another who's struggling, who's suffering, who's caught in the web of karma. And we can also encourage them, go in this direction. And in that way, you also become like a guru. And we, the more we start to have realization in our experiences of the reality of bhakti in this transcendental level, the more we practice it ourselves, the more shakti we'll have to influence others. So really, this is, yeah, this is, therefore we call it the cycle. We're tied to the wheel of birth and death again and again until someone comes who's outside of this wheel and directs us where to go, how to live, or reconnects us to our loving relationship with Krishna. So I agree, this is, otherwise the conditioned state, it's the false ego trying to get out of the false ego. You see, it's the conditioned self trying to get beyond conditioning. And we have to realize that about ourselves when I try to make my own plan to become Krishna conscious. No, we have to submit to the plan. There is a plan coming from the Acharya. We submit to that plan and that will change us. Thank you, Guru. Thank you, Guru. Anybody? Yes, we have a question here. I'm not sure if the microphone is... There we go. I heard a little sound.
I thought in response to Pangovinda Prabhu's question, I believe it was yesterday morning, I think it was Pracharananda Prabhu's class, he talked about how a tsunami, like the tsunami that came some years back, when it first began, it was only a 2-inch deviation on the ocean floor, hundreds of miles out. And then by the time it reached shore, 100,000 people were killed by these waves. And he compared that to Srila Prabhupada's coming. One man with no money, no supporters, and look what we've got in 50 years. So when you ask, I was putting those two together and thinking, we don't know the potency when the books go out or when we discuss the ideas that are in Srila Prabhupada's books. I remember years ago listening to a class by Giriraj Swami. He said that, I think it was the movie called Ghost. So many people had told him, it's as if the person that wrote this script had read Srila Prabhupada's books. So then he was on an airplane and it was playing, so he watched it. But like that, you may not think, oh, here's my guru. But the ideas that Prabhupada is presenting in his books are going far and wide. And I just, that's what I thought of.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you.
Yes, very good.
My son was just born. His name is, we named him Arjuna. So also, it was nice. We were happy because he was born on August 13th, which is the day Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta. So we love that because we feel like that sacrifice, that day where Prabhupada, just imagine that day, Prabhupada stepping on the Jaladuta with a mission of compassion, just like we're talking about in this verse, the compassion in the heart of a devotee, to go to the Western world, you know, that sacrifice, that compassion, the mission of compassion. So we ask for all of your blessings that our son can also be a follower of Srila Prabhupada and continue on that mission of compassion in this world to help all the fallen souls. Yeah. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. August 13th, yeah.